Let's turn again to Colossians chapter 2. Colossians chapter 2. And we'll read together verse 3. Colossians 2, verse 3. This is referring to Jesus Christ. You'll notice that's the last word in the previous verse, verse 2. In whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Children, there was a headline this week in the news, and this is what it said. Man killed hunting treasure in the desert. Man killed hunting treasure in the desert. This was a man from Colorado who was killed, who died while he was searching for a buried chest of jewels and gold worth about $2 million. It'd been buried by a millionaire called Forrest Fenn. This millionaire was annoyed when he was seeing so many people just spending their lives indoors, doing nothing. And so he got this huge bronze treasure chest, and he filled it with gold and jewels, about $2 million worth, and he went into the Rocky Mountains of New Mexico, and he buried it there. And then he wrote a poem in which there were some clues as to how to find this buried treasure chest. And in fact, as the years have passed and people have not found this chest, he's written more things, more poems, more riddles, in order to give people more clues. But 7 years have now passed since it was buried in 2010. 65,000 people are estimated to have tried to find it over the years. And this Colorado man who died is not the first to have died in pursuit of this treasure. In fact, so many people are getting injured and into trouble that the authorities there, the government there, have actually asked the millionaire to call it off, to go and get the chest and to stop issuing these clues which are producing so much injury and even death. Imagine that. A treasure hunt that is ending in death. Well, children, I want to invite you today to a treasure hunt that ends in life. A treasure hunt that ends in life. That's what the Apostle Paul here describes for us. It speaks of Christ, in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Well, like all treasure hunts, this one has a map. And this map is the one that you have in front of you, this book. This is God's map that he has provided to help you find the greatest treasure in the world, Jesus Christ. And this map is 100% accurate. It's totally accurate. You won't find a map anywhere that's perfectly accurate. There'll be some place somewhere on the map where something is just slightly not right, or there's some detail missing, sending people astray, sending people on wild goose chases, but not this map. It's 100% accurate, totally trustworthy, because it was written by God. And this map has something for everybody. You know, there are some people and they find some maps very easy to read, and other people find certain maps quite difficult to read. But God has so written this book that there's a map for everybody in it. So, for example, some people might love stories. Well, God's provided so many stories in this book, not least in the Old Testament. And every single one of these stories is a map that points to Christ. Other people like poems. Again, there are many poems in this book. We sing from them, don't we? The Psalms. There are others as well in this book. And every one of these poems, again, has an X in them, a cross in them. It points to Christ. Other people like history or doctrine or biography. Well, there's something for everyone in this book. Whatever kind of map you like, whatever kind of book you like to read, whatever kind of stories you like to read, you'll find one in here, and every single type of writing in this book is pointing to the same thing, Jesus Christ. Some of the maps are, you might say, big scale maps. They give you an overall, a big picture view. And other maps are much more detailed, much more small scale. And we need them both. We need the big picture and we need the more refined and detailed. But as you read this book, children, what you should be asking God to do is help you find the X, the cross, the Christ of this story, of this chapter, of this verse, of this poem, of this letter, of this biography. It's a wonderful map. No matter what page you open, it's pointing you to Christ. But let's think of the hunter. Who is the treasure hunter here? Well, of course, it's you and I hope. I hope you're one of these treasure hunters. I hope you're one of those who are seeking this greatest treasure possible in Jesus Christ. But there's some things you need to know about yourself. There are things you need to know about the treasure hunters in this story. We've got a number of disadvantages to overcome, a number of difficulties. And the first one is we're blind. And the second one is we're deaf. And the third one is we're lame. That's how the Bible describes us, spiritually, not physically. I'm sure we look at ourselves, we think, well, I can see, I can hear, I can walk, most of us. But no. Remember all these miracles in the Bible where Jesus heals the blind and the deaf and the lame? Well, he did that to teach us what we are spiritually, that spiritually we are blind and spiritually we are deaf and spiritually we are disabled. That finding Christ, therefore, is not so easy. Imagine if you came across someone who was blind and deaf and lame and they said they were going to look for buried treasure. You think, well, you don't have a hope. You'll never manage that. Well, so when we are searching for Christ, we need to realize we have these problems. We are blind, we are deaf, and we are lame. And left to ourselves, we will never find this treasure, therefore. We'll never see it, we'll never hear it, we'll never find it. And therefore, these treasure hunters, you and I, we have to come to the Lord and say, I want to find Christ. I want to find this great treasure, but on my own, I can't do this. I can't see him. I can't hear him. I can't make my way to him. In fact, it's even more serious than this. These treasure hunters are actually dying. These treasure hunters are dying. All of us are dying. We've all got a limited amount of time in this world, don't we? Now, some of us may get 70 or 80, 90 years or so. Some of us may, but still a limited time. We've still got a beginning and an end. Some of us will get far less. And children, I'm sure you've seen in the news or heard mom and dad talking about it in the past few weeks. How many young people have been killed in the Grand Rapids area just in the last few weeks and months from different accidents and diseases and tragic situations? And none of us know how long we have to find this treasure. We are all dying. If not dead, we are dying. And again, this should make us, as treasure hunters, urgent, anxious. It shouldn't be something you say, well, I'll just leave that for another day. I'll leave it for another year, or I'll leave it till I'm in my teens or my 20s or my 30s. No. If you really knew how serious your situation is, you'd say, I've got to find this today. Today. I don't have tomorrow, for sure. I don't have next week, for sure. I know I have now. Therefore, let me use this moment to find this treasure now. So there are treasure hunters. There's a map. There's a treasure hunter. But there are also additional dangers and difficulties that face these treasure hunters. And not so much the ones inside us, such as our spiritual blindness and deafness and lameness. Not just that we are dying, but around us there are dangers. Just as these people found in the deserts of New Mexico and the Rocky Mountains, there are dangers. There are obstacles, there are impediments in our path to finding this treasure. And this letter was written by Paul because he saw so many dangers that were threatening the people in Colossae. And so he wrote this letter to the Colossians. You can get some clues to it, for example, in verse 4, the verse after, verse 3 that we're looking at. This I say, he's saying, I'm talking about this treasure, lest any man should beguile you. That means lead you astray with enticing words, with attractive words. And what Paul's saying here is, here's this great treasure, and here's a map pointing you the way, and here's some truths about yourself that you need to know, but all this is going to be contradicted. There are going to be people that you're going to hear at some point in your life that are going to say, you know that map you think is going to guide you to Christ? It's not worth reading. It's not trustworthy. It's outdated. It's old-fashioned. It's in the past. You need to leave that behind. There's going to be other people who are going to tell you that, you know, you're not really as bad as the Bible and as your pastor tells you. You know, this whole thing about urgency and speed, it's not really that important. And you know, there are other treasures in the world, there are other attractive options that you should explore and experiment with. This is what the apostle's speaking of here. People beguiling you, trying to fool you and lead you astray with words that at times seem very convincing and persuasive. Maybe some of them are whispering in your ear. Maybe you hear them at school or at college or in your friends or in the media. The apostle is saying, beware, these are dangers. You can't flirt with these. You can't toy with these. You can't play with these. You can't entertain these. You can't let these voices into your life. They might come from teachers. They might come from journalists. They might even come from religious leaders. If anything contradicts this book, this map, it's a danger to be avoided, to be fled from. So many false promises. There's so many people saying, here's a map, and here's the treasure, here's a pleasure you should pursue. If you get this, if you do this, if you enjoy this, then you will really have arrived. You'll have everything you'll need, and it's all a mirage. It's all a false promise. And there are people all over the world who think X marks the spot. And they think X marks the spot, and it's X is laid over money or possessions or people or places or travel or things or just whatever it is, and they're all digging furiously trying to find the treasure, and they just keep coming up with more dust and more dust and more dust, but they don't stop digging. And of course there's the danger of the devil himself. There's somebody out there called Satan whose full-time job is to keep you from finding the treasure. And who's using foul means, fraudulent means, forceful means, whatever means he can to keep you from that treasure. Distracting you, diverting you, leading you astray. You can't see him. You can't hear him. But he's there. He's working. And the closer you get to the treasure, the more aggressive, the more hostile, the more active he becomes. Many dangers. But there are also many helps. There are many clues that God gives us to help us find the treasure. You think, for example, of this great promise, seek and you shall find. Imagine that. These 65,000 people who went out in the Rocky Mountains and the New Mexico deserts didn't have that promise, did they? Seek and you shall find. They had the command, seek. But all they could really say after was, and we hope we will find. If we work hard enough, we'll find. But no one's found. But here, for this treasure, you seek it. You will find it. You see, I haven't found it. It's because you haven't sought it properly, prayerfully, sincerely, with all your heart, because the promise is true. Seek, and you shall find. You say, well, I don't know what to do. I don't know which way to turn. Well, there's another promise. James gives it. If anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally, generously, abundantly, and it shall be given him. You lack wisdom? Here's a promise. You go, I don't know which way to turn. I don't know which way to go. I don't know what to do next. Ask. Ask of the God who gives abundantly. You know this man, Forrest Fenn. He's giving out clues here and there. Maybe once every 6 months he puts another little riddle on the internet. His giving of wisdom is in tiny little drops. A few words here and there. And here we're told, this God gives abundantly, generously. He can't give more than he has given. And therefore ask. People have gone to Forrest Fenn, and they've even tried to bribe him. Will you give us more clues? Will you give me a wee bit extra? And he won't do it. You go to God, children, and ask him. He'll give it. Go to him with your questions. Go to him with your puzzles. Go to him with your doubts. Tell him, I'm not sure if I believe this. I find this hard to accept. I don't know the answer in this situation. He promises you he'll give you wisdom. He'll give you answers. And even as being here every Lord's Day is one big mass of clue, God puts on a weekly seminar, as it were, for all treasure hunters. That's why if you want to find the treasure, you come to the treasure seminar. You come to the place where God gives his clues, where God has promised to give special help to his treasure hunters. And there's another help, and that's God's people. If your mom or dad are Christians, or your grandparents, or you have a good friend or a mentor, this is an amazing thing. What do you think would happen if somebody went to try and find Forrest Fenn's $2 million treasure chest and found it? What do you think is going to happen? One of two things. One is the person will get it, take it away, put it in the trunk of their car, and disappear, never to be heard of again. I mean, why tell anyone? Then you get robbed. Then people just come with begging letters. Or else somebody's going to find it, and they're going to show it all off to everyone else. They're going to put a big stage and a big show, and all the cameras will be there. And then they'll disappear with it. But they won't be handing out the jewels, will they? Have a diamond. Hey, have a gold coin. Oh, they won't be doing that. They don't share it. But God's treasure finders share what they have found and delight to do so. If we have found Christ, we want others to find him too. We don't think, I'm going to keep him all to myself. I'm going to do this in secret so that nobody knows. I'm not going to hold it up in such a way that it looks so good, but you can't touch it. Don't dare appropriate him. Don't dare reach out for Christ. Don't dare think he's for you. We don't do that. God doesn't do that. God's people don't do that. God's pastors don't do that. Everyone has found Christ and knows Christ, holds him up and says, will you take him? Will you have him? I want you to have what I've got. I want you to share in my joy. I want you to have a part of this treasure. And the amazing thing about this treasure is, when it's shared, it doesn't get less. It gets more. You take 10 gold coins and you give out 5. Now I've only got 5. I've halved my treasure. But the amazing thing about Christians who share Christ with others is the more they give of Christ, the more they find they have of Christ. A Christ shared is a Christ multiplied. So many helps, many encouragements, many clues. But look at the treasure with me for a moment. In him are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Wisdom and knowledge. Two words, they sound very similar. It seems to speak of the same thing, but they're slightly different. Knowledge is about facts, and wisdom is about how to use the facts. So take, for example, you can have someone who's got a lot of knowledge, who has a lot of facts in their head, but really don't know how to use them in their lives. You might, for example, have someone who's very good at math, but they're a total disaster financially. Their money is a mess. Or you could have someone who's very good at botany and biology and plants. They're experts in these things, but you look at their yard and it's a jungle. So there's a lot of facts, there's a lot of knowledge, but there's no wisdom. And what we're told here is that in Christ is both knowledge and wisdom, the facts and how to use them, the truths and practical applications in our lives. In Christ is knowledge and wisdom. What does he teach us? Well, he teaches us about ourselves, doesn't he? One of the first things he does tell us and teach us is about our nature, that we are blind and deaf and lame and dying. And it's good to be taught these things. That's a treasure. That's a fact that has huge practical implications that the vast majority of the world know nothing about. That's a treasure. But he also teaches you, of course, about himself, about his three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. He teaches you about his salvation. He teaches you about how he saves a sinful soul, how he gives sight to the blind and hearing to the deaf and spiritual ability to the spiritually disabled, how he gives life to the dying. He teaches you all these things, not again just as a set of facts, but as a set of facts that actually are experienced by the person. He teaches you about how he accepts and adopts into his family. He teaches you about the forgiveness of sins, how you can have every single sin washed away, your guilty conscience cleansed of all the sins that are there accusing you and pointing all their fingers at you. He teaches you about how to love, truly love, and be loved. Teaches you how to have peace. He teaches you how to be happy and joyful. These are massive jewels, aren't they? The whole world is digging for these jewels and can't find them because they're digging in the wrong place. As Paul says here, in him are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. He will make you wise unto salvation. He'll tell you how to live and he'll tell you how to die. He'll tell you what this life will be like and he'll tell you what life afterwards will be like. He'll tell you about heaven and he'll tell you about hell. All the treasures, everything that is valuable, everything that is supremely worthwhile. He'll tell you truths that have the greatest sticker price in the world. The most valuable, precious, useful, beautiful truths. All you need to know. That's what he says here, doesn't it? All the treasures. Not some, not most. All the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. You can't get more than all, can you? And it's not just that he teaches you about salvation and how to be his child, how to enjoy communion with God, great treasures. One of these is an infinite treasure, isn't it? But he also teaches you about marriage, how to raise children, how to manage your finances, how to care for your body, how to pursue his calling on your life, what job to do, what role of service to take in the church. Everything is here in Christ. All the treasures, everything that's ultimate, everything that's superior. You take one of these truths and the value of them is greater than the richest person in the world. We read about these people, don't we? The hyper tycoons. And they're worth tens of billions of dollars. Tens of billions of dollars. But they don't have Christ, most of them. Therefore, they really have nothing valuable. Nothing of lasting value, nothing of true value. All their billions will be worth nothing on the day of judgment. All the houses, all the cars, all the bank accounts, all the awards, all the accolades, where will they be when the person's in the grave. They'll be gone. We brought nothing into this world, and we'll bring nothing out of it apart from Christ. You can bring Christ out of the world, but you've got to get him in this world. You've got to get him in this world. It's interesting, isn't it, how the apostle here puts it, in him are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Now that word hidden suggests this requires effort, doesn't it? Requires effort. If something's hidden, it takes some work to find. It takes some energy, it takes some effort, it takes some focus. You think of all these people in the deserts of New Mexico climbing these mountains. They're putting huge effort into this. In fact, I was stunned that the man who died just last week searching for this treasure, they interviewed his wife and his surviving son. And you know what they said? We're going to take up where he left off. We're going to continue the search. It's madness, isn't it? It's crazy. They're putting in the work. They're putting in the effort. Their whole lives are dedicated to this great object. Nothing is going to hold them back, no matter the cost. They're going to find this treasure. And so when we read here, hidden, it indicates that this is not going to be easy. This treasure is not going to be found by people who make this number 2 or 3 on their list. This treasure is found by seekers, by hunters, by those who pursue this passionately, with purpose, with focus, with determination. But remember this. Hidden does not mean impossible to find, like Forrest Fenn's treasure. No, God is not like that. He's not made this so difficult that only just a tiny few select people will find this. Not at all. All who seek will find. In fact, there's a beautiful verse in Matthew chapter 11 which tells us the kinds of people who do find. In Matthew chapter 11, verse 25, Jesus speaks to his Father in heaven and says, I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because thou hast hid these things from the, who? From the wise and prudent, and revealed them unto babes. What's he saying? He's saying, if you pursue this treasure proudly, you'll never find it. If you pursue this treasure independently of God, you will never find it. If you pursue this treasure relying only on your own efforts, you will never find it. But if you pursue this treasure as a babe, as a young child, with that kind of inquisitiveness, with that kind of questioning. It's amazing, isn't it? You listen to a 3-4-year-old as the world is opening up to them and their brains are interacting with all the new things. It's just question after question after question. Inexhaustible treasure trove of questions. And that's the kind of spirit that Jesus is speaking of here. God reveals his treasure. God guides such treasure hunters to the treasure, pursuing this with excitement, with enthusiasm, with hope, with optimism, with enjoyment, with passion, making this the greatest pursuit of our lives. That's what finds this treasure. And you know the amazing thing is? You can't get the treasure without him. Many people try. Notice what Paul says. In him are hid all the treasures. Not with him, not beside him, not near him, so that, oh, I'll just take that. I'll take love, I'll take peace, I'll take joy, I'll take happiness, I'll take forgiveness, and I'll walk away with that and leave him. No. Can't happen. You can't get the treasure without the treasure chest, which is Christ. This is how one old writer put it. Jesus is the Father's glorious casket in which are hidden God's greatest treasures. You don't get the treasure without getting him. Why? Because he's the treasure. Yes, he brings many minor, you might say, jewels with him, relative to him. But he is the ultimate treasure. It's to have him. It's to know him. It's to love him and be loved by him. That's the treasure, isn't it? Do you remember the Queen of Sheba, when she traveled to see Solomon? And she saw Solomon in all his glory. Solomon showed her all his wealth and all his riches and all the buildings. And she just about fainted. She just about passed out. She was staggered and staggering. And the words that came out her mouth were, the half wasn't told me. She's looking back to all that she heard about Solomon in her own land, and all the descriptions of him and all that he had. And she eventually gets here and she realizes, these people really, they didn't have a clue compared to what's real. What I was told is nothing compared to this. And that's the way I feel, that's the way your parents feel, your Sunday school teachers, your grandparents, as we try to tell you about Christ. We can't tell you, really. We tell you as much as we can. We use the words that God gives us, but when you find him yourself, you'll realize. See that minister that preached that morning on the treasure hunt? He came nowhere near this. He was floundering, trying to compare Christ to treasure. Really, it's as if he was describing a pile of $10 notes, but the reality is this massive treasure chest of precious jewels. That's what's on the other side. That's what's in him. And you get in him by faith, by believing in him, by trusting in him, by putting your confidence in him. And all your life you'll be unpacking this treasure chest. It's bottomless. It's got no dimensions. It's just, you realize, you come nowhere near the edges or the bottom, no matter how long you go on in the Christian life. There's more to explore. There's more to enjoy. Do you know there was a general who, it was a great, he won many victories. I can't remember the country. It was one of these old stories about old times with old countries. And he came to the king one day and he said, you know, here's the spoil. Here's the spoil. And he came with this huge carriage full of jewels and gold from his latest conquest. And the king was so pleased with this general that he said to this general, open your mouth. And the general opened his mouth, and the king took a big handful of these jewels, and he put them in his mouth. He said, I'll give you as many as your mouth will take. Well, what's that general going to do? He's going to be pulling his mouth as far as he can. He's going to make it as big as he can. He's going to be blowing out his cheeks. He's going to squeeze in the last gold coin and diamond. He's going to pack in as much as he can. That mouth would never have been open wider. And you know what God promises in the Psalms? He says, open your mouth wide, and I will fill it. Where are the open mouths? Let's pray.